Well, good morning, everyone. We're going to start this morning with a picture on the screen. If you'd like to put it up, Richard, that'd be great. Thank you. Does anybody know who this is? Yeah, that's right. This is. Anybody know his name? This one? No. This is Mario. Mario Gomez. Mario was the oldest of the miners to be freed in Chile this week. And I'm sure we've all seen some of the media coverage of the miraculous escape of the 33 miners from the collapsed mine, having been imprisoned there for 10 weeks or so. Now, the scenes of the miners coming up from the surface and being greeted by their president and being reunited with their loved ones were very, very moving. And each one of those 33 guys has an amazing story to tell. But did anybody see the release of this one man, just a couple of people? Now, there was something very significant about Mario's emerging from that capsule, and it was that the first thing that he did in the spotlight of the world's media was to kneel down and pray. Now, it's reported that this is what he said afterwards. He said afterwards when he was being interviewed, "I've come back to life. Sometimes you need something to happen in your life to really reflect and understand that we only have one life here on earth. I'm changed. I'm a different person." Now, making the link to Abraham, as we continue in our study of Abraham in Genesis, I hope that today what we're going to see is that life has changed for Abraham, that he's come back from Egypt, and that this is a very significant time for him. He's learned from his experiences. So we're going to turn to Genesis 13 in a moment. But just before we do that, I think it's very interesting in these narratives. The story of Abraham is unfolding just like a TV drama. Now, one of my favorite programs that I always like to talk about is Spooks. And I really like the way that at the beginning of Spooks, something happens. And this happens in other series as well. And a word comes up on the screen. Can anybody tell me what that word is that comes up on the screen? The word is previously. And it's always very exciting because what happens is previously comes up. And then they run through the scenes of the most crucial points of the story so far in quick succession. And this is great because it brings you up to date with what is going on. It reminds you of the twists in the story, and it sets the stage for the next episode to unfold. Now, if you were to do a previously for the life of Abraham before reading Genesis 13, I think it might go something like this. The first scene, God's command to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household. And then Abraham receives the promise of blessing. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you. Then we see Abraham, age 75, setting out from Haran with Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the possessions and people that they'd acquired. On arrival at Bethel, Abraham builds an altar, and he calls on the name of the Lord. And then famine strikes, and the whole household heads off to Egypt. Then we see Abraham in Egypt telling Sarai, "Say you are my sister, so that I will be treated well for your sake." And Sarai is taken into the Pharaoh's palace. But then disease is inflicted on Pharaoh's household. And you get that command from Pharaoh to Abraham, take her and go. And that's kind of the story so far, which brings us to chapter 13. It's on page 13 in the church Bibles. And so let's read together now from Genesis 13. So Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abraham had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev, he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There, Abraham called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. And quarreling arose between Abram's herders and the herders of Lot. The Canaanites and Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, Let's not have any quarreling between you and me, or between your herders and mine, for we are close relatives. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Lot looked around and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, towards Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the people of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had parted from him, "Look around from where you are, to the north and south, to the east and west. All the land that you see, I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." So Abram went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he pitched his tents. There he built an altar to the Lord. Now, having spent some time in this chapter over the last few days, I think there are two themes that we can look at from chapter 13. And the first one is that Abram, in this chapter, gets back on track with God. Abram gets back on track with God. After all that has happened in Egypt, Abram returns to the place that he set out from. That's to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier. He goes back to where he began, and significantly, to where he had first built an altar. And once again, Abram calls on the name of the Lord. Now, further on in the chapter, God repeats his promises to Abram. There's the promise of land in verses 15 and 17. All the land that you see, I will give to you. And then goes on, then go walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you. And in verse 16, there's the promise of offspring, a family and descendants. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Let's remember at this time, Abram was a very old man, and he didn't have any children. Yet God made this amazing promise. And then once again, Abram moves the tents and builds an altar. So what can we learn from Abram about getting back on track with God? Even though Abram came back from Egypt with great riches, he went back to the same place that he started from, right back to the start. It's probably fair to say that as we look back on Abram's time in Egypt, that time was wasted. I think it's fair to say that God could have provided for Abram's needs in Canaan. And as Vincent pointed out for us last week, although Abram was materially blessed in Egypt, that's not sufficient justification for him going there. Although God is good enough to bring about good things, even when we disobey him, there's still a price to pay for our disobedience. Abram's unbelief led him into sin, and it caused him to lead others into sin. For a while, it broke apart his family when Sarai was taken into Pharaoh's palace. And that only came to an end when Pharaoh, who was someone who knew nothing of God, rightly rebuked Abram. And yet, finally now, as we move into chapter 13, Abram does the right thing. Instead of beating himself up about his past sin, he gets himself back on track with God. He goes back to the life that God had called him to living in the tents as a pilgrim and with his altar as a worshipper of God. And he calls on the name of the Lord. He came back into Canaan as a beginner. He came back to Bethel, back to the tent and the altar, and back to doing what he should. And after his experiences in Egypt, I think we could say that Abram could say, like Mario, the guy we were looking at earlier, "I'm changed now. I'm a different person." Now, becoming a Christian, being born again, is about starting life over and beginning to live life under God's authority. And that's what happens when we put our trust in Christ. And there's an old song that will be familiar to many of you. And it goes like this. There's a way back to God from the dark paths of sin. There's a door that is open and you may go in. At Calvary's cross is where you begin when you come as a sinner to Jesus. And if that's how the Christian life begins, yet the Christian experience is often that we make mistakes. We fail God, we stray from his ways, and we need to come back to him and ask him for forgiveness, just as we did earlier this morning. And we need to start again. And it's as though, like Abraham, we have to go back to the place where we started. Now, one of the great things about my job here that I'm really enjoying is working with Ryan and getting close up to some of the work that he's doing with Teen Challenge and other partners. And one of the people that he met up recently with was a guy who'd some years ago been through the Teen Challenge rehabilitation program. And he'd done really well in that program. He'd gone on to become a member of the staff at Teen Challenge and then moved on from that again. But his old struggle with addiction returned and his life began to go quite badly wrong. After quite a long time, he had this encounter with Ryan that happened fairly recently. And through that, this guy decided to apply to go back into the Teen Challenge program. Now, Teen Challenge took him back, but the condition was that he had to start right back at the beginning. He had to go back and go to the beginning of the rehab program. There were going to be no shortcuts from someone who'd been on the staff. Had to go right back. And there is a way back to God when we fall away, and I hope that that's an encouragement for all of us. But sometimes we have to go back to the beginning, to where we began with God. So Abraham went back to the place in the land of Canaan between Bethel and Ai. Let's see how things progress for him from then on. He soon has to deal with a difficult family situation, and we'll come to more of that in a moment. But let's just, before we look at that, after Lot moves on, God repeats those promises that he'd made to Abraham earlier, before he went down to Egypt. And I want us to notice, when you look at the promises in chapter 13, how the promises are scaling up. In chapter 12, God commanded Abraham, go to the land I will show you, and to your offspring I'll give this land. But now in chapter 13, he says, all the land that you see, he's now seeing the land, I will give to you and your offspring. And he's being more specific about the offspring. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth. Which is unbelievable that he was going to have such a great number of descendants. So these promises are coming from God. And as it seems that as Abraham's putting his trust in God and learning, more and more of God's promises for him are being revealed to him. And that's a process that's going to continue in the coming weeks as we move forward in our study. God doesn't usually show us the whole picture at the beginning when we first put our trust in him. Rather, it's as we walk in his ways that he guides us for the next step of the journey. And by the end of the chapter, Abraham's moved on again, and we're told that the place that he moves to is near the great trees of Mamre in Hebron. Now, apparently, Mamre means vision. And Hebron means communion. And once again, by the end of this chapter, Abraham is walking in the vision that God has for him, and he's walking in communion with God. And Abraham builds another altar. And this is a sign of the priority that he placed on the worship of God and on offering sacrifices to him. So that's one storyline. Abraham gets back on track with God. And there's another one that I'd like to share with you too. And it's all about this business with Lot, Abraham's nephew. Abraham and Lot part company. And it's interesting to know that as Abraham faces this challenge, it's just as his life was getting back on track. He was just getting organized, doing the things he should be doing, and straightway he's got something he has to deal with. And very often in our walk with God, just as we get one thing sorted, something else comes up that will test our faith and our trust in God. Now, again, in the work with marginalized adults here at the Good Shepherd Mission, we've been very excited by the number of people that have made professions of faith over the last 3 years, or just under 3 years. We've seen over 40 people who've publicly professed Jesus as their Lord and Savior. However, despite that, for many of those that decide to put their trust in God and to trust him to help them turn their lives around, very often something comes up for them straight away that proves a real test. Perhaps long-awaited accommodation is offered that they might lose out on if they go into rehab. Or a former partner turns up and tries to dissuade them from going the route that they've chosen. And we're finding that this is a really important time for us to pray with people as they've made that bold step of faith. And they really need our prayers at that time. So here's the challenge that Abraham faces when he's just getting back on track. They have to make a decision about their land and their herds. Now, just to recap, who was Lot? Lot was Abraham's nephew. Lot's father, who was Abraham's brother, Haran, had already died before the family set out from Ur back in chapter 11. And Lot stays with Abraham. He went with him to Egypt, and he came back with him. And as we have seen, Lot, as well as Abraham, had become very wealthy. And the quarreling breaks out between the herdsmen of Abraham and the herdsmen of Lot, as both groups are seeking to find adequate pasture for their herds. Now, Abraham makes a proposal to keep the peace. He proposes that the two camps part company. And amazingly, he gives Lot first choice over which direction to go in. And in response to the proposal, Lot chooses the plain of Jordan, which certainly sounds like the kind of place that you'd want for your flocks and your herds. It was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, and that's a reference to the Garden of Eden that we know about from earlier in Genesis. And this land probably reminded Lot of the fertile pastures that he would have seen in his time in Egypt. Now, it's interesting to note here the change in Abraham's behavior from the previous chapter. In Egypt, Abraham was really concerned about himself. He was concerned about saving his own skin, to the extent that he allowed his wife to be given over into Pharaoh's harem. But now he's back on track. He puts God first and others next. And as the elder of the two, of Lot and Abraham, Abraham had every right to decide about the land for himself, make his choice, and yet he gives that choice over to Lot. His trust in God was sufficient to allow Lot to make the choice. And how does Lot handle that situation? Well, we don't read that Lot built an altar. We don't read that he called on the name of the Lord. Rather, he surveyed the land, and he made his decision. And the land of the plain of Jordan certainly looked like the best option. And he has no hesitation in choosing it for himself and for his herds. And it's perhaps as one of the commentators has written, Abraham had taken Lot out of Egypt, but he couldn't take Egypt out of Lot. As we've seen, Abraham goes on to walk with the Lord and to inherit blessing. What about Lot? Now, I don't want to steal the thunder of those who will be giving the talks over the next few weeks, but I'd like us to look ahead just very briefly and see what becomes of Lot. Well, Lot goes on to success in the world, but then to spiritual failure, and he comes to a shameful end. He first goes to live among the cities of the plain. He pitches his tents near Sodom. Now, we're told that that's a place where men were wicked and sinned greatly against the Lord. But by the next chapter 14, Lot's living in Sodom And then by chapter 19, from what we know there, it's quite likely that he was a member of the city council in that place. And there's worse to come as well. Twice over the next few chapters, Lot has to be rescued, once from invading kings and once when God destroys Sodom and Gomorrah. And when we last hear of him, he's living in a cave and he's guilty of incest. Instead of walking with God, he regresses into the world and away from God's blessing. And if you were trying to pinpoint where does the spiral downwards begin for him, this decision about the land was a very crucial choice for him. And I think the lesson for us this morning is very clear. What appears to be the best option in the eyes of the world we live in is rarely the best option in the sight of God. So how can we apply that? Well, I believe it should call into question how we approach the big decisions in our lives, whatever they might be. And that's probably going to be very different things for all of us, depending on our stage in life and our situation. But it might be which school to choose for your children, which job to do, which career path to follow, where to live, who to spend the rest of your life with. Do we make our decisions based on the criteria of the world and society in which we live? Are we thinking about what will give us the best advantage? What will ensure our financial security and that of our children? What will enable us to live in a nice place and to have good holidays? Or whatever the thing is for us. Well, when it comes to big choices and decisions, do we call upon the Lord? Do we come before him in worship? And do we seek his guiding? It may be that the place with the better schools and the more affordable housing may not be the place that God has called us to. Can we trust, like Abraham, entrust ourselves to God and allow him to work out his purposes in our circumstances? Now, I know it's not always easy to do this. It's rarely easy. It's difficult. And at times, it's going to feel as though we are standing against the tide. But we shall see with Abraham that if we put our trust in God, he is faithful, despite our weakness and our fears. Now, just as a footnote to this situation, it is possible that Lot may have felt a call to go to Sodom. And God does call people to serve him in challenging circumstances, whatever they might be. And sometimes those situations may be going to be like those of Louise, who we've been praying for this morning. Or sometimes it's going to be a call to somewhere where that person is really going to face the pressures of the world. Could be in business, in finance, in one of the professions. And whatever God has called you to do, he is able to uphold you in. I think that's very important to note. But I think the lesson from Genesis this morning is that unless God has very specifically called you to Sodom or some other place, then it would be very foolish to go there. So to draw some conclusions here. When we mess up in our walk with God, while we are still living here on earth, there is always a way back. Getting back on track can mean going back to the place where we started with God. And for us as Christians, that's really the foot of the cross, where Christ died and took the punishment that we deserved. And when we have to make choices, as Christian people, we should seek God's guiding and direction rather than being influenced or pressurized by the standards of the world around us. Remember where Lot ended up. And remember also the blessing that was promised to Abraham. And just for the final word, I'd like to go back to Spooks, because what happens at the end is that each episode the screen freezes and the picture turns like a sort of photo negative, kind of sort of inside out. And then you get glimpses of what's coming up next in the next episode. Now, what would that look like here? Well, as we turn on, next chapter, you've got Lot being carried off into exile by these invading kings, and a dramatic rescue plan has to ensue. And then those promises that God's been making to Abraham, they increase again, and we've got the reaffirmed promise of offspring. So the story continues, and the next installment will be next Sunday. Thank you.